spent the week trying to figure out a clever way to weave the word consubstantial into the reflection without anybody noticing. And I wasn't able to do it. So I just decided to look it up instead. It's a word that's defined as meaning of the same substance or essence, used especially of the three persons of the Trinity in Christian theology. But the first time I heard it used in church, the word really just kind of represented, I hate to say, institutional arrogance. I don't like saying that. But consubstantial is a word that I have never used in conversation. Nobody that I know has ever used that word in conversation. It could be an example of the otherness of those who would impose the use of that word on me. Or I could take a deep breath and reflect a little bit, and it could be an opportunity for me to learn more about my relationship with God and with the Holy Trinity. It can bother me in a bad way, but it could also bother me in a good way. It's a word that challenges me to look at my relationship with God in a way that I really haven't before. In my experience, I've had 4 different home churches, 5 different hometowns that I could call home, and 6 different jobs, so I can claim that my life experience has some diversity to it. And the universal constant that I've encountered in all of these situations has been one that change is inevitable. And if I've learned one thing in all of those situations, it's that change is one of the most upsetting things to people. When it comes to change, I'm actually pretty conservative. I think that we should do what works, and we should change what doesn't. But it bothers me that it seems like a lot of change is only done to change the things that do work and replace it with things that don't. And to me, that's what consubstantial represented to me when I first heard it. Several years ago, the United Church of Christ, which was my home denomination, created a committee to write a new hymnal. Change was in the air, scary, new, and different. New songs with new words. Well, the melodies stayed the same, but the words were changed so that they wouldn't be male-centric, so that they would be more inclusive. Historically, the theology created the hymnal, but now the hymnal would be driving the theology. If theology was going to push that God was male and was going to serve a world and a society dominated by males, this hymnal was no longer going to support that. That was a change, and to many, it meant that political correctness was taking over and dictating the language. For us Protestants, we weren't used to this. This was top down in an organization that was used to functioning as a bottom-up democracy. For us Catholics, this new translation hits the same way, but it's a little different. It's top-down dictation, but this time in an organization that has always been led from the top down. And here we sit in a democratic parish where people get a say, practicing the faith of a top-down dictatorship. What do we do in a situation like that when we are faced with such a choice? When my dad was pastor of a church in West Haven, Connecticut, he had a conversation with the Catholic priest in the same town. And in that conversation, the priest said, "In your church, the people have the power, so you have to be careful what you say to them. In my church, I have to be careful what I say to the bishop, not to the people." One faith, one God, 2 very different political environments. Yet both bring about change, and both have to figure out how to deal with it. Sometimes what is different, no matter how small, outweighs what we have in common. Our gospel today talks about the difference between being saved on earth and being saved by Jesus. 10 came, 10 were healed, 1 was saved. This is a scary and important difference. Jesus can heal you, but whether or not you are saved by him is up to you and what you do. We can focus on what we don't like about change or what is different about others. And Jesus is here to tell us that doing so is really our undoing. It is our attempt to save ourselves and heal ourselves on earth instead of allowing our souls to be saved by Jesus. The one who was saved was a Samaritan. A Samaritan is really nothing more than an inhabitant of Samaria. But who here has ever met a Samaritan? I haven't. But I've heard a lot about them in church and in Bible school growing up and in Sunday school while growing up. They come up a lot. But I've never met one, at least not in a literal sense. But if we take some political rhetoric to heart, then maybe I've met and known many of them in a metaphorical sense. Samaritan represents one who is not believed to uphold my cultural values and is not worthy of the benefits of my way of life. They're therefore maligned, marginalized, and made out to be cultural pariahs. If we listen to those who fight for political power, then there are many Samaritans among us, and much of the arguing is about what to do about them. Those other people. And Jesus tells us that the answer lies in whether or not we are interested in salvation or in saving just our earthly selves. How we answer that question will have a profound impact on how we conduct ourselves as people and as a church. In 1989, Stephen Covey wrote a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and many of you have at least heard of it, if not read it. And habit number 6 is to seek first to understand and then to be understood. Business wisdom of the late 80s, 90s, and 2000s has its roots in the prayer of St. Francis, which says, O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. This may not be the reality of the political climate that we live in with what we hear, but this is where we as an independent parish in the Catholic tradition can heed the call of St. Francis. We don't have to get hung up on language, words like consubstantial, just as we don't have to get hung up on arguments over gender in our songs or how many angels can fit on the head of a pin. As long as it doesn't interfere with our ability to console, understand, and love. But the important thing is that with all of these issues, we have a choice and a responsibility to make the right choice, not just for ourselves, but for what our faith calls us to do and who our faith calls us to be. We don't need to fear change, only to respect what it means for our relationship with God and with each other.